Our second reading this morning also comes from the book of Job, chapter 22, verses 1 through 5, verses 21 through 30, and chapter 23, verses 1 through 17. Please listen for the word of the Lord to you today. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered, "Can a mortal be of use to God? Can even the wisest be of service to him? Is it any pleasure to the Almighty if you are righteous? Or is it a gain to him if you make your ways blameless? Is it for your piety that he reproves you and enters into judgment with you? Is not your wickedness great? There is no end to your iniquities. Agree with God and be at peace. In this way, good will come to you. Receive instruction from his mouth and lay up his words in your heart. If you return to the Almighty, you will be restored. If you remove unrighteousness from your tents, if you treat gold like dust, if the gold of Ophir like the stones in the torrent bed, and if the Almighty is your gold and your precious silver, then you will delight yourself in the Almighty and lift up your face to God. You will pray to him and he will hear you, and you will pay your vows. You will decide on a matter and it will be established for you, and light will shine on your ways. When others are humiliated, you say it is pride, for he saves the humble. He will deliver even those who are guilty. They will escape because of the cleanliness of your hands." Then Job answered, "Today also my complaint is bitter. My hand is heavy despite my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his dwelling. I would lay my case before him. I would fill my mouth with arguments. I would learn what he would answer to me and understand what he would say to me. Would he contend with me in the greatness of his power? No, but he would give heed to me. There an upright person could reason with him, and I should be acquitted forever by my judge. If I go forward, he is not there, or backward, I cannot perceive him. On the left, he hides, and I cannot behold him. I turn to the right, but I cannot see him. But he knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I shall come out like gold. My foot has held fast to his steps. I have kept his way and have not turned aside. I have not departed from the commandment of his lips. I have treasured in my bosom the words of his mouth. But he stands alone, and who can dissuade him? What he desires, that he does. For he will complete what he appoints for me, and many such things are in his mind. Therefore, I am terrified at his presence when I consider. I am in dread of him. God has made my heart faint. The Almighty has terrified me. If only I could vanish in darkness, and thick darkness would cover my face." Some years ago, my mother-in-law called me to say that her sister-in-law had called. Her sister-in-law had been at home when she realized that she had not seen or heard her husband for quite some time. Several hours, in fact. So she searched the house. When she failed to find her husband in the house, she went outside to search for him. There, she found him. She found him at the bottom of a hill, lying under a pile of leaves with a ladder on top of him. Apparently, Uncle Francis had leaned a 20-foot ladder against a tree and had climbed the tree with a chainsaw to trim tree limbs. The first limb went very well, but when he reached further out to trim the second limb, he fell. My mother-in-law's response was, "What an idiot! What an idiot!" Several months later, Uncle Francis's daughter brought him to visit my mother-in-law. Uncle Francis's daughter is a lovely woman who is patient and kind. was working very hard to take care of her father. On the visit, she shared with me, "We have finally convinced Dad that he brought this upon himself." Now, I must confess that I too believe that it takes a certain measure of idiocy to climb a tree with a chainsaw, and it takes an even greater measure of idiocy to do so at the age of 84. However, I do not think telling a man who has 4 broken ribs, 4 broken vertebrae, blood on the brain, and a broken sternum, which broke open during the fall because he hadn't healed from open heart surgery 3 months prior to his fall, I do not think telling that man he's an idiot and he brought it upon himself is particularly kind or helpful. Last week, we read about Job. We read about how God allowed Satan to take away all that Job had, all his flocks, all his servants, all his children, and all his material belongings. And yet, Job was still able to say, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised." We also read about how God then allowed Satan to enfeeble Job with sores and take away his health. And yet, when Job's wife entreated him, "Are you still holding on to your integrity? Curse God and die." Even then, Job would not yield. Instead, he responded, "You are talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble?" In the face of extraordinary suffering, Job refused to turn his back on God. This week, we read about Job and his friends. When Job's 3 friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, hear about all the troubles that have come upon Job, they set out from their homes to go and to sympathize with Job and to bring him comfort. When they see Job from a distance, they can hardly recognize him. And they begin to weep out loud, and they tear their robes and they sprinkle dust on themselves. Indeed, they sit upon the ground with Job for 7 days and 7 nights and say nothing to him. For they see how great is Job's suffering. Then after 7 days and 7 nights of silence, Job opens his mouth. Job opens his mouth and curses the day of his birth. Indeed, Job says, "I loathe my very life. Therefore, I will give free rein to my complaint and speak out in the bitterness of my soul. I will say to God, 'Do not condemn me, but tell me what charges you have against me.'" Job wants to know why. Why? Why are all his flocks carried away? Why are all his servants killed? Why are all his children dead? Why are all his material belongings struck down? And why is he afflicted with illness? Why? Why is Job made to suffer thus? Job asks the eternal why. And when he does, a dam bursts. And then Job and his friends become locked in a kind of spiritual combat. And for 34 chapters recorded in the book of Job, they argue. They argue about the meaning behind Job's extraordinary suffering. for Job's friends believe that only the wicked suffer. So Job must have sinned. Thus they tell him, all his days the wicked man suffers torment. Job's friends believe that God is teaching Job a lesson. Thus they tell him, blessed is the man whom God corrects, so do not despise the discipline of the Almighty. Job's friends believe that if Job just lives righteously, he will prosper. Thus they tell him, submit to God and be at peace with him. In this way, prosperity will come to you. Accept instruction from his mouth and lay up his words in your heart. Job, however, insists upon his innocence and defends himself against their accusations. Job desires to speak to the Almighty and to argue his case before God. Job seeks an answer from God. In response, there is only divine silence. Instead, Job hears the voices of his friends. His friends insisting that they are right, saying, your own mouth condemns you. Your own lips testify against you. Job's friends are like preachers, come bearing not good news, but bearing judgment. Job looks Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar in the eye and responds, miserable comforters are you all. Job feels abandoned. So what happened? Job's friends came to bring him sympathy and comfort. And instead they seemed to bring him torment and greater pain. Job's friends had good intentions. They left their homes and journeyed to be with their friend Job in his time of suffering. And they made a good start. They wept with him. They sat with him. And they were silent with him. They made a good start, but they made a not so good finish. I suspect when Job asked the eternal why, when Job began to question his suffering, when Job began to question God, Job's friends saw not only Job's questioning, but also Job's suffering as a challenge to their faith. A challenge to their faith that the world, a challenge to their faith that God is a just God. A challenge to their faith that if they make the right choices, if they do the right things, if they do good in the world, then they will be protected from evil. They will be spared from suffering. They will be rewarded and prosper. Thus, Job's friends needed an explanation for Job's suffering. They needed to believe that Job must have brought these calamities upon himself, that Job must deserve such treatment from God, that Job must repent his sins so that he could once again prosper. So although Job's friends came to bring him comfort, they end up treating him in such a way that Job says to them, "How long will you torment me and crush me with your words?" Sometimes, aren't we rather like Job's friends? We intend to bring comfort, yet when confronted by suffering, when confronted with pain and anguish, when confronted with the divine silence, don't we seek an explanation, and in so doing, judge, saying, "It's such a shame that Edna died of breast cancer, but you know, she didn't get regular mammograms." Saying, "Well, Sam did smoke 2 packs a day. Is it any wonder he got lung cancer?" Saying, "I hear Tim and Tina only dated for 3 months before they got married. Of course Tina didn't know he would be abusive." Saying, "It's his own fault. What idiot gets up on a ladder with a chainsaw at the age of 84 years old?" Now, all of these might be true. Not getting regular mammograms can put a woman at risk of succumbing to undiagnosed breast cancer. But not all women who do not get regular mammograms die of breast cancer. Smoking certainly increases a man's and a woman's risk of lung cancer, but not all men and women who smoke get lung cancer. Getting married without a long engagement, without an extended period of getting to know one another, can certainly lead to unpleasant surprises in a marriage, but not all short engagements result in spousal abuse or even divorce. And it is rather imprudent for 84-year-olds to climb ladders. There is a much higher risk of falling as our balance declines over age. But not all 84-year-olds who climb ladders fall and get hurt. These are all partial explanations at best, and rather cruel judgments at worst. I believe Job's friends had it right at the beginning. They left their homes and they journeyed to be with their friend Job in his time of suffering. They wept with him. They sat with him and they were silent with him. Unfortunately, like us, they were uncomfortable with the divine silence. And they were particularly uncomfortable with Job's asking God, Job's questioning God, Job's complaining to God. Indeed, I suspect they saw Job's eternal why as a weakness of faith. So they offered explanations that were partial answers to worldly questions, but certainly were not answers to the eternal why. The eternal why asked by Job and by so many others in the extremity of suffering. In the end, Job's friends attempt to defend God. They defend God with partial answers. They defend God by interpreting God's intentions. They defend God by judging Job. I suspect that Job's friends and we too at times defend God out of fear. Fear that if we too ask the eternal why, then somehow our faith is weak. C.S. Lewis, who was a fellow and tutor at Magdalen College of Oxford, and then was professor of medieval and Renaissance English at the University of Cambridge, who was the author of a popular children's series, The Chronicles of Narnia, which later were made into several popular movies here in the States, who was a well-known Christian apologist and writer of popular theology. C.S. Lewis, who was hailed as an intellectual giant of the 20th century and as a great defender of the Christian faith. When he lost his wife to cancer after only 4 short years of marriage, rather late in his life, C.S. Lewis kept a series of journals wherein he chronicled his experience of grief over the loss of his wife, who had brought him such great joy. In his grief, C.S. Lewis struck out at God with a Job-like passion, expressing his loss of purpose, expressing his anger, expressing his bewilderment over the death of his beloved wife. To his surprise and disappointment, he found that all the letters he received, all the words of comfort that were offered, even his own faith seemed hollow to him. How could this be? His faith was supposed to give him peace in this moment, and yet it did not. So C.S. Lewis did what C.S. Lewis did best. He wrote. It is significant here to note that the one thing that offered some measure of comfort, according to C.S. Lewis, during this time of confusion and loneliness, was a friend who came to his home and sat quietly in a rocking chair by the fire. He didn't offer words of comfort. He didn't ask questions. He just sat silently present and read a newspaper. When C.S. Lewis went on his many walks upon his return, there his friend would still be sitting in that rocking chair, quietly reading his newspaper, simply present. Present to him. After a year, C.S. Lewis ran out of empty journals, and he refused to buy new ones, for he felt that his grief could go on perpetually. These journals were published initially under pseudonymous authorship in a small book entitled A Grief Observed. Lewis did not want his name on the book because he was concerned that the extremity of his grief might trouble some of his followers, and he didn't want to damage their faith. Indeed, the extremity of his grief did trouble some of his followers. When his name was placed on the book after his death, some admirers were so troubled by how close he came to despair that they thought it might actually be a work of fiction. But it was not. Is calling out in our sorrow, is expressing our confusion, is articulating our sense of abandonment to God really a weakness of faith? The Gospel of Mark recorded for us that Jesus himself, after being arrested, beaten, and condemned, while hanging on the cross, cried out, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," my God, my God. my God, why have you forsaken me? Crying out in sorrow, crying out in confusion, crying out his sense of abandonment. Was Jesus weak in that moment? Or did Jesus know? Did Jesus know that God was listening?